You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
First we started out real cool, taking me places.
Have you been worried about paying your bills? Because I have. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Everybody, yo, we got bills. And there's a reason we might be feeling a little bit tight. And it ain't because of Democrats. It's because of Republican policies. And it is the 3 o'clock hour. And so here on the Maggie Dawn Show, it is time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. And one of the questions I hear so much from you, the listeners, from other folks out there, from friends of mine, including conservatives, they'll admit Democrats have policies that serve the middle class best, and yet that message doesn't seem to get across. We're going to talk about that today with Democratic pollster Celinda Lake. She's been in the game for a while. She is president of Lake Research Partners, a leading Democratic polling firm. She's one of the Democratic Party's leading political strategists. She was one of the two lead pollsters for Biden's successful campaign in 2020, and she continues to serve as a pollster to the Democratic National Committee. She's worked for the Democratic Attorneys General, the AFL-CIO, the Human Rights Campaign, Planned Parenthood. I could go on and on. Welcome, Celinda. It is truly an honor to have you with us. We've been digging into the powers that be, the billionaire donors, the corporations, and the institutions that wield so much power in our economy and therefore by extension in our politics and policies. But we're capping off this week with the group of people that you know matters the most, and that is middle class and working people in this country. At the end of the day, come November 5th, it is our voice, the middle class voice, the voice of working people that will matter the most and will control the balance of power in this country. So I want to dig in here. We've been told that the key to winning the presidential election this year are middle class and working voters. How true is that here in a state like Wisconsin that is a clear pathway to the White House?
Yeah, well, it is the clear pathway to the White House. And it's so nice to be on with you. And I'm thrilled that you're in constant dialogue with your audience about these really important issues. And they're very frustrating. So it's glad to have someplace with clarity and honesty and that stands up for what we all know to be true. So the working class, middle class vote is essential in Wisconsin. The best path to victory, of course, is the blue strategy, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and then the Omaha extra electoral vote. And in those states, we have a number of ways in which the blue collar vote is important. First of all, it makes up a majority of the vote. It makes up a particularly high proportion of the undecided vote and the swing vote, the people who aren't too happy with either candidate or any candidates right now or any political party. And these are the people that feel three things. They feel very, very strongly that the economy has been bad for them. There's no victory laps. Price gouging, bills, healthcare costs, all the things that you're talking about. Excuse me, my allergies.
Just take a minute, Celinda. Yeah, we've been talking about the price gouging. We've been talking about tax policy. We've been talking about the Trump tax cut for billionaires and millionaires. We've been talking about the fact that the Trump tax cut, while he sold it to working people and middle class as a tax cut for the middle class, for working people, but we got a pittance while billionaires and millionaires made off with the farm in a almost literal sense, especially given the corporatizing of agriculture and the buying up of family farms and the struggle that so many middle class Wisconsinites feel. I mean, we don't have to be a pollster, though you know the numbers more than anybody else. I always hearken back to that old strategist, James Carville, who said, it's the economy, stupid. And so you're speaking to this reality that people feel like they're getting screwed. And they are. And yet, we struggle as Democrats to get the message across that Democratic policies consistently over the last 25 to 30 years have been trying to serve the middle class more. How do we help refocus? How do we help get this message across to the middle class and working people in a state like Wisconsin?
So the first thing we need to do is be in touch with real people's lived experience. We keep saying to people, inflation is down, inflation is lower, and it's like, what planet are you on? Wages have gone up, wages have not gone up enough to keep up with rising costs. And people wanted to go back to where it was pre-COVID, pre-supply chain issues, and it's not happening. People are also looking for us to take action. They're looking for us to be proactive. We're supposed to be the party of fighting for the people. We're supposed to be the party of labor unions. We're supposed to be the party of taking on greed, things that make no sense. And you have, now we're talking about a minimum tax for billionaires because so many of them are not paying any taxes and they don't go to H&R Block to get their taxes done.
Right.
So it's really important to get these, to get our activity out there, that we'll take on action. The French president calls in Kroger. We don't call in Kroger and say, hey, stop price gouging. Everybody in America knows that groceries are going up too much.
Yeah, I think it's speaking directly about things like price gouging. And here, Vice President Harris, candidate Harris, has come out and said, we need stronger federal laws that directly target the sort of price gouging we know is going on. We've had shows about that on this very network. And it still remains a puzzlement to me, Celinda, that voters seem, I don't know, to have bought the snake oil being sold by Donald Trump and Republicans. They continue to, again, against all indications in reality to the contrary, to give Donald Trump higher marks on the economy. Is this just a disconnect between the, frankly, the fact that the economy tends to lag policymaking, and so there's a disconnect between what people are feeling and what's the different policies that are enacted, as well as, frankly, as you pointed out, we need to stop saying things like, well, inflation's been solved, without acknowledging that people still feel this pain.
Well, we need to be more populist in our town. And that's one of the places where I love patriotic millionaires.
Yes.
Because they say the wealthy are not paying. The wealthy corporations, the CEOs are not paying what they owe. They're not paying their fair share. We, the working people and the middle class people, we produce the profits for the CEOs, but they get bonus for laying us off. So that's pretty outrageous. So we need to be more populist. We need to repeat our plan more. We lay out a plan there and we think everybody knows it. No, we lay out a plan and nobody knows it. And until it shows up at people's real lived experiences at people's kitchen tables, they're not going to think that plan is real. It's just political talk. We need to come back and have a written plan with validators and be relentless on implementing that plan. And we need to pick a fight. What people do remember is when we produced something and when we picked a fight. We picked a fight with pharma. We negotiated lower prescription pill prices, and we capped insulin at $35. People know that. They know the fight. They know that pharma is strong, and they know that the price of insulin was way too high and way too arbitrary. And God knows Wisconsinites know it, because you can just go across the border to Canada and get infinitely cheaper drugs.
Yeah, I really think that you've landed on something that's important, and that is getting away from generalities and, frankly, a bit of the academic discussions about the economy. It needs to be specific and it needs to match up with what people are experiencing every day with some very, very concrete objectives and a plan to get to those objectives. And so when I think about price gouging, for example, we know that price gouging is happening because the profit margins are increasing at the time when cost of inputs has gone down, and those profits, that profit margin, we're not seeing being reinvested in workers with a wage floor that's rising as fast as their profit margin. So we know the math here, right? So when we talk about something like price gouging, is it possible to get specific? How do Democrats get specific so that people know that they can, frankly, take a Democratic candidate's promise to the bank?
Well, they need to see it in action, and they need to see the results. And one of the things that was really problematic with Build Back Better, I mean, when the first rebuilding was done by Obama and Biden together, they had signs posted everywhere. This project brought to you by the Obama-Biden economic plan. We had none of that with Build Back Better. People had no idea. These jobs were taking a long time to get online, and people thought, when are these jobs going to come up? Because I got to buy milk today.
Right.
I got to buy eggs tomorrow. And people also think, why can't this be made better with the United States? Why do we run out of infant formula? And why can't we fix it? Why can't we? Okay, we got avian flu. Well, go get some more little chickens and get eggs. I mean, people think, and then we've decimated the family farms. We've decimated the small business sector. They're really hard pressed to even survive. And Wisconsin has lots of both. And people think, when are we going to do something? What I love about the Harris plan is it's very concrete. $50,000 for small businesses, $26,000 to buy a house. These are things people can measure. I never had anybody in a focus group say, well, gosh, I wish the GDP would be better so my family would do better. They say, I wish the price of eggs would come down so my family would do better.
Well, one of the reasons that the GDP measure is meaningless is because it truly is to a family's budget. The GDP going up may in fact be a reflection of CEO pay and corporate profits going back into shareholder pockets, which is not the vast majority of Americans. Folks, my very special guest this half hour is Celinda Lake, president of Lake Research Partners, a leading Democratic polling firm. We are talking about why the importance and the impact, which has been working for working Americans in Democratic policies, and in fact, the Harris platform, isn't resonating in the same way that we would think it would if folks were just voting their economic best interest. We're going to have more with Celinda when we come back. If you've got questions or comments, phone and text lines are open, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Pay my bills, can you pay my telephone bills, can you pay my automobiles, then maybe we could chill. I don't think you do, so you and me are through.
Okay, Coconut Man, Moonhead, and P. You ready? Seems like everybody's got a price. I wonder how they sleep at night when the sale comes first and the truth comes
second. That's a good coconut tree. How are you? I'm Maggie Dawn. This is The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are in the 3 o'clock hour, and so it is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Really excited to be joined today by Celinda Lake, president of the Lake Research Partners, a leading Democratic polling firm. And we're talking about the disconnect between both the purpose and the impact of Democratic economic policies, which largely are explicitly designed to work to the benefit of middle class and working class folks in states like Wisconsin, to help shore up small businesses, to help make childcare more affordable, to eliminate and penalize price gouging by grocers. I call it pandemic profiteering. They're like the war profiteers after World Wars I and II. We made it illegal then, we can do it again. Kamala Harris has proposed things that will help regular working people, like $50,000 grants to help start small business, a $26,000 assistance for people buying their first homes. These are things that will help bridge the gap to raise the tide and thus raise all ships, meaning middle class ships, people. That's what we're talking about. And Celinda knows a little bit about why our messaging continues to struggle. Let's talk a bit about Gen Z swing voters, millennials as well. There seems to be a whole lot of hand-wringing about these folks. People are telling them that they're worried about things that are different from what other demographics of voters are concerned about. But it turns out from your research, Celinda, that Gen Z voters are worried about the same things that the rest of us are.
Yes, and that is particularly true for Gen Z, swing Gen Z voters. So we found that about a third of Gen Z voters were definitely most worried about the war in Gaza and very, very focused on that. But the rest of the 70%, 40% were focused on the economy and rising prices and the inability to afford a home, the inability to pay afford education, much less pay off the debt, the inability to get a rising wage, what kind of side gig or multiple side gigs you have to make it in this economy, the fact that wages aren't going up, the fact that jobs are reducing their benefits, the fact that you can be laid off at any moment. And we found a third of the people, 30%, were worried about all the money we're spending abroad. We need this money here at home. So what I love about polling, Maggie, is conventional wisdom is wrong. You're not wrong. You're right. Conventional wisdom is wrong about 50% of the time. And it's great to have the polling to show it.
Yeah. As an economist, I have always had deep trust, frankly, in good objective data analysis. And the key word there is objective data analysis. It can be revolutionary. I wanted to pass along a question and a comment from Donna in DeForest, texting in from WMDX. She says, we're now looking at the price of eggs as reasonably cheap. And yet we continue to talk about this quite a bit. Mm-hmm. She points to the cost of housing, rent, credit cards, insurance, and medical costs as the things that really have, I'm going to call, a long-term burden on middle-class paychecks, on working people's budgets. And I'll just offer one brief explanation, and then I'd like to turn it back over to you, Celinda. Donna, one of the reasons that I think this gets brought up is that the price of eggs was at one point in time extraordinarily high. And a lot of people look to eggs, frankly, to try to bridge when they're a little short because eggs are such a cheap source of protein. It also gets mentioned a lot because we know that there are only a couple of egg producers in this country. And we know that they artificially suppressed supply, which helped keep prices artificially high for much longer than was necessary. Effectively, they gauged in a price fixing scheme by manipulating supply. So Donna from DeForest, that's in part the answer because it stands as a stark example of corporate pandemic profiteering that should be illegal and that Vice President Harris is proposing a stronger regulatory system to gird against. But again, she's mentioning things that are essential to all of us. I've had credit card debt that was blistering. I've received huge medical bills. It costs a lot for medical insurance, even employer provided. How are Democrats communicating about these now? And how should we be communicating about these sorts of issues going forward, Celinda?
Well, I think, first of all, a great question. And I really loved her feedback. Food costs are the number one thing that people mention when they're thinking about inflation, because the average woman goes to the grocery store three times a week and you're just confronted with it. And if the prices of food keep going up, you can't save money for any of those other things. Yeah. And then housing, absolutely out of control. And it's out of control all over the place. Helena, Montana, Omaha, Nebraska. We're not just talking about Manhattan and San Francisco.
Yeah.
And young people will never be able, those Gen Zers, they're convinced they'll never be able to afford a home. And a lot of seniors can't get out of their home because they can't, they don't dare try to get something else somewhere else. So it's really a problem. It's so great that you mentioned healthcare, because that is the second biggest cost that women raise in particular. Mm. And medical debt is really soaring. People's awareness of it is huge. A huge number of people have it. The average debt is over $10,000.
Oh,
it's not something you can control. You can control if you're going to go to college. You can control if you buy that Lexus car. You can't control medical debt. And as we said in the Michigan Senate race, GoFundMe is not a healthcare system.
No kidding. And it shouldn't be. Here's a couple things about housing prices. What we have seen is the explosion of private equity and hedge funds buying up housing stock by the thousands. I'm not just talking about apartments. I'm talking about single family homes. And once they own significant chunks of the housing stock, effectively they are exerting monopolistic type powers, and they can set rents at whatever rates they want. Frankly, these are way above market rents to rent single family homes. It reduces the available supply for those that wish to purchase that might actually have saved enough, puts all of that out of reach. Kamala Harris has a plan for that, and it is to prosecute, to use the power of the FTC and the DOJ to go after those corporate landlords that are engaged in, frankly, illegal price fixing schemes and rent. Celinda, we've got to leave it there. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Good fight, my friend. I appreciate all you do. That was Celinda Lake, president of the Lake Research Partners, a leading Democratic polling firm. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. We've got Terry Barr coming up next with what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin news after these brief messages.
Forget about the price tag.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Sing like a white winged dove, but I do some political talk. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 3:30 on Friday, and that means I'm not even doing the talking. We've got Civic Media's very own Terry Barr for what is good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. Welcome back, Terry. It's so nice to have you on this beautiful Friday afternoon.
It's gorgeous, isn't it? I am loving this weather, and I don't know about you, but it could stay like this, through the winter for me.
Yeah, I've got no problem with high 70s. Got no problem with it.
Absolutely. Well, that's kind of the theme. We're going to be talking in these two overlooked stories that I found about the season ahead and, of course, Halloween. And I don't know about your neighborhood, but my neighbors are already decorating. And I think they go out for Halloween much more than any other holiday now.
Yeah, I see that across neighborhoods now. It used to be a couple of pumpkins, maybe, out in the front. Now, I mean, people are unloading their pocketbooks at the Home Depot for all the decorations. It's impressive.
Well, here is a kind of fun story. As a kid, I remember going to the Milwaukee Public Museum many, many times with family and with school trips. And, you know, they are doing some recent renovations until they actually move to a new location, which will happen in 2027. But some of these recent renovations, many people were worried about some of the exhibits being taken down and not put up either until they move or not at all. And one of those is the Streets of Old Milwaukee. That is one of my favorites. You feel like you were walking through Milwaukee in the 1900s. It's just so well done. Well, it's not only back after some renovations and better than ever right now, but for all you Halloween lovers, the Streets of Old Milwaukee are going to be decorated with old Halloween props from the 1900s. How perfect! These are often handmade by whatever the homeowner would have around. So it's a great way to sort of see what people used to do when they didn't have a lot of money, or an opportunity to buy things, as Maggie mentioned, at a place like Home Depot. So you can see this starting this weekend through November 4th at the Milwaukee Museum. And it sounds like it's going to be so cool, Maggie.
I've been a huge fan and supporter of the Milwaukee Public Museum for a long, long time. Certainly having worked at Milwaukee County, I talked with their executive director frequently. The county's support of the museum and its new home, which I've been driving past where they're finally building for the new museum. Such an important time, and what a cool exhibit. And again, such a great opportunity to see how folks used to decorate for these different events. Mm-hmm. I know I'll go check that out, and I didn't know about it. So thank you very much, Terry, for informing me about a way to celebrate the holiday. Yes, that's amazing.
Yeah, and they say they've never done this at the museum before. This will be a first of Halloween decorations. So I guess we're all a little bit Halloween crazy, so that's okay.
I love it. Good for the museum. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Terry.
Good. Here's the next one, and I'm really, really loving this. There is a Wisconsin author. He is now writing a book about some of the things he loves, which includes the Badger State, old farms, and trying to figure out, especially if they're abandoned, who may have lived there? What's the story? Mm. And autumn. So, Aaron, if you will, let's hear a little bit of Chris Hardy's writing. This is as he reads it to me by him.
I stopped the other day on a country road for a moment or two, a brief respite towards the end of another busy day. I drive by my point of rest every day. It's a barn no longer in use next to an abandoned farmhouse. The barn's not that old. The rounded roof appears to be in good shape, and it still has its faded red paint. Next to it is a small silo. There are many of these scenes dotting the countryside. Buildings on smaller family farms no longer needed, where the economics of farming has ended their usefulness. They stand, silent and empty, eventually succumbing to the forces of nature. But on this late afternoon, I was beckoned to stop. The hillside behind the barn was a canvas of reds, orange, yellow, brown, and green, illuminated by the sun and framed by a bright blue sky. The setting sun was already casting a shadow on the floor of the valley, and in a few minutes, the scene would be lost. I pulled off the road to capture this moment of pure autumn in Wisconsin.
Again, that is author Chris Hardy. He lives in La Crosse. And as we know, with all the hillsides around La Crosse, it's just gorgeous all the time, but especially at this time of year. So happy autumn to everyone, because it starts on Sunday.
How lovely. He's describing that magic hour in the late afternoon. And I think Wisconsin provides some of the most beautiful and bucolic moments, especially in the fall. You know, Terry, I've been lucky to have lived all over this country and abroad for some short periods of time, but every opportunity I have, whether it's the lakeside downtown landscape of Milwaukee, or the gorgeous drive in the Kettle Moraine, or driving up the Door Peninsula, perusing the Apostle Islands, the areas of Rhinelander, certainly the bluffs that Wisconsin offers, and the beautiful expanse in western Wisconsin along the Mississippi River. I really think the fall time in Wisconsin is one of the most beautiful. And I think it gives us all a moment and an opportunity to reflect on how lucky we are to live in this state, right? And frankly, how much agreement there is amongst Wisconsinites about how important our environment, our natural resources are. Wisconsin has always been a conservation state because we all enjoy the outdoors so very much. A brief story about when I'm late fall camping. I have done it extensively in Wisconsin, but I also had an opportunity to do some late fall camping in Colorado. Now, Colorado opposes a little bit different weather swings in late fall than does Wisconsin. And thank goodness I was prepared. Now, here's where it gets a little interesting, Terry. We had, of course, pitched our tents in an area that had a bit of a windbreak down at a river's bend. And for those that know Colorado, I was in the Poudre Valley. And so in the Poudre Valley, we had our tents pitched. We had our fire going. It was a long day of getting everything set up. And of course, one of the great things about fall and winter camping is you don't have to worry about your ice melting in your coolers because everything stays naturally cold. But it got really, really cold that night. And so as the group of us were all huddled around and we had done a goodly amount of hiking that day, we all unshod, right? We took our hiking boots off and put our feet up to warm ourselves by the fire. And as we passed a bottle of what could have been an adult beverage around while we're regaling ourselves and each other with old tall tales, I noticed a bit of smoke emanating from the bottom of my feet, Terry. I lit my freaking like hiking socks on fire sitting around the campfire. And there I am in my camp chair, falling over, swatting the bottom of my feet out as my friends absolutely died laughing at me. Of course, because I've done a little bit of hiking, I had the liner socks on and then my woolies over it. So no harm to the tender bottoms of my feet. But those hiking socks were definitely RIP after that little fall camping evening fire adventure.
Yeah, I bet you never expected that. And you've got so many great stories that I could just listen to you tell your stories time I get a chance to chat with you.
I love not knowing what you're going to talk about, Terry, because it brings a smile to my face and it usually triggers some hijinks from my younger days. I will say this, folks, when you got your feet up and your shoes off, don't let your hiking socks on fire. That is a lesson I only needed to learn but once. And Terry, I thought I would do you a favor this weekend and tell you a little bit of what might be good, local, and overlooked. This one coming out of local Wisconsin, or local Milwaukee, excuse me. It was National Cheeseburger Day this past Wednesday, which everybody loves a good burger. And there was a Wisconsin cheeseburger that made the list of the nation's best. Cops Frozen Custard made Yelp Elite's list of the 20 best places to grab a cheeseburger. Of course, Cops known probably as much for their burgers, their cheeseburgers, as they are for its custard. They came in ranked 11th on the list and was the only Wisconsin restaurant that made Yelp's elite list of the best places to grab a cheeseburger in the United States. And interestingly to note, the number one spot is in Hawaii, which I wouldn't have guessed if you would have given me 49 guesses. Hawaii would not have been on my guess of the best place to buy a burger.
Does it have pineapple in it?
That's what I was really curious about that. There's this great joint just over the 16th Street Bridge that has a Hawaiian burger and it has a slice of grilled pineapple, ham and Havarti cheese on the hamburger. And I like to put a little Red's hot sauce on that puppy. And that is delicious. What's your favorite burger, Terry?
I like my medium rare.
Oh, of course.
But I love it. Yeah. And this whole new idea of the smash burger, where everything's kind of put inside the burger. And it just is, it's almost like when you were a kid and you ate pizza burgers.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So it's kind of fun to like try and make up some new recipes of your own. And that is one thing my husband loves to do. And I would have to say that his burgers are actually one of my favorites.
Oh, well, that's so that. Well, Terry, I'm going to have to impose upon you and your husband sometime to have one of his now Wisconsin Civic Media famous hamburgers. You know you're of a certain ilk. Oh, I would love it too. You know you're of a certain ilk when your mom fried you up some pizza burgers back in the day. That is of a time, Terry. Listen, enjoy this most beautiful weekend. Enjoy the Brewers qualifying for the playoffs, Terry. And thanks
Isn't
so much.
It's wonderful.
It is absolutely fantastic. Thanks so much for sharing again in this 3:30 slot on Fridays. What's good, local and overlooked here in Wisconsin. Thanks, Terry.
Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. And same to you, Maggie and Aaron as well.
Folks, when we come back, I'm going to talk about this appeals court ruling tossing Republican Senator Corey Tomchick's defamation lawsuit. You're not going to believe how this one got started or the ridiculousness of his argument. And frankly, this is part of the attack on independent media outlets, not just the one that reported on Corey Tomchick's alleged homophobic slur, but the attacks that can sometimes come the way of little outlets like Civic Media. We got that story coming up for you next in this last segment of the Maggie Dawn Show this week here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
Boy, baby, do a leap and make them dance when they come on. Everybody looking for a dance floor to run on.
If you wanna run away with me, I know a galaxy and I can take you for a ride. I had a premonition that we fell into a rhythm where the music don't stop for life. Glitter in the sky, glitter in my eyes, shining just the way you like. If you're feeling like you need a little bit of company, you met me at the perfect time.
I need you to listen, and I appreciate when you do. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I hope you all are having a beautiful Friday afternoon. I hope the work day is over, that you've got a refreshing beverage on the way. If you are driving home, be sure that you're driving safely. I anticipate there's going to be a wee bit of traffic. We've had some major closures, 894 shut down here in the Milwaukee area. We got Brewers games. We've got political rallies going on. So, folks, be patient. Put your windows down. Crank the radio up, especially if it is Civic Media. And everybody, unless you're driving, get your cell phones ready, because in the 4 o'clock hour, Dom Salvia, which is coming up next, is going to be giving away some green or gold in our statewide text to win contest every hour. And in the 4 o'clock hour today, Dom's going to drop the secret word of the hour. You're going to text that in via the Civic Media app, which you can get for free from your favorite app store. And we'll give away either $100 or some gold jewelry in the 4 o'clock hour. Your text will also register you to win our grand prize, a pair of indoor club-level tickets to see the Green and Gold in Green Bay on Monday, December 23rd, against New Orleans. Good luck to you all. But I need to close out this week with another one of those head-scratchers, and boy, does this not bode well. A state appellate court has thrown out a Republican state senator's lawsuit accusing an online news outlet of defamation after it reported he was overheard using a homophobic slur against a teenager and another individual testifying at a public hearing. In its 36-page decision, The District 3 Appeals Court rejected State Senator Corey Tomchick's argument that the Wausau Pilot and Review intentionally and maliciously published stories inaccurately accusing him of using the slur while in the audience at an executive committee of the Marathon County Board in August 2021. The debate at the time was over a resolution, a proposed resolution calling for greater diversity and inclusion in the community. So here's what. First of all, I don't know why it is acceptable for Republicans to continue to reward one another for opposing things like greater inclusion in the community. Huh? Like, forget the dog whistling and the overreactionary histrionics about talking about inclusion. If you're a community, if you're a county board, if you eventually become a state senator, don't you want people to feel included in the community? Or is your message that you only want people who look, think, pray, and believe exactly as you do to be included in the community? And if that's your take, then democracy ain't it, right? Because that's not what democracy is. Democracies don't distinguish between people based on their gender. They don't distinguish and say you belong and you don't based on race. That's illegal discrimination. So why in God's name would Corey Tomchick take time at the time he wasn't an elected representative, he wasn't an elected state senator, he was a very successful businessman. What was so deeply troubling about a county board resolution supporting inclusion in the community in Marathon County? He took time out of his day to go down there to oppose it. And in the process of doing so, according to three people who heard Tomchick's comment, he used homophobic slurs towards a teenager. I'm guessing the teenager was probably a member of the LGBTQIA plus community, and this is who this rich businessman is going to pick on. And to make matters worse, when called on it by the Wausau Pilot and Review, his response isn't, "My gosh, I'm so sorry, that was stupid," which would have made this a zero news cycle thing. Everybody would have just moved on. No, what he does is sue this online publication, the Wausau Pilot and Review. Why does he do this? Not because the law is on his side, because the Wausau Pilot and Review relied on three people who heard what the guy said and reported it. He was a limited public figure because of his leadership as a business owner. So they weren't reporting a knowing falsehood, and they therefore didn't do it maliciously or intentionally to defame or harm Mr. Tomchick. It's called accountability, sir. If you say it and you say it out loud, even while sitting in the audience of a public meeting and someone overhears it, it's fair game to report. Here's what Shireen Seward, founder and editor of the nonprofit news website, had to say of the outcome of the case. Quote, "I am relieved that the court has upheld the fundamental right of journalists to report truthfully on matters of public concern, reaffirming the importance of free and independent press. While this victory is encouraging, the prolonged legal battle has taken a toll on our organization and underscores the need for stronger protections for journalists in Wisconsin. It cost this small little outlet over $200,000 over 3 years to defend itself. Folks, let's call on the state of Wisconsin to enact a law that allows news outlets to collect their attorney's fees when they prevail in these bogus defamation lawsuits, which now seem to be the stock and trade of the Republican Party." That's going to do it for me on this edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. Dom Salvi is up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together. Happy weekend, y'all.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.